Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. As always, great to get together with you at the end of the week and contemplate the lunacy that has transpired. And we're almost always never disappointed, or maybe I should say we're almost always disappointed, because crazier and crazier it gets. That just seems to be the one constant underlying theme. Those of you familiar with me, familiar with my program, know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency that has been supplanted by the component agencies of DHS, what I have come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender. And boy, oh boy, that name has never been more appropriate, unfortunately, than it is today. But we will get into it. But we are also expecting a very special guest, a friend and a great American, retired Major General Paul Vallely, should be joining us shortly. But until then, let me remind all of you about a couple of websites I would very much like for all of you to go visit. Please visit my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, and please go visit capsweb.org. That's Californians for Population Stabilization, and I believe that we have General Vallely with us. Happy Friday, Paul. How are you?
Well, thank you, Michael. I'm fine. We have a beautiful day out here in Montana.
Well, it's a beautiful day here in New York, although, to be honest, we are missing our pup. My 10-year-old Wheaton Terrier, unfortunately, had to be put to sleep this week, so it kind of tempers everything. He was a great friend. My favorite bumper sticker said, the more people I meet, the more I love my dog. And it's certainly true of this guy. He was an amazing friend to everybody. But it puts things in perspective.
They're an important part of the family, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And you're an important part of this country. And I so much appreciate your service to America, not just as a general. And certainly, when I read your bio, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Your career, if you divided it up into thirds and shared it among three great men, would have kept them busy. I don't know how in the world you achieved all that in one career, but all Americans owe you an amazing debt of gratitude. But even to this day, so long after proudly wearing that uniform, you're still serving America and Americans with the Stand Up America Foundation that you started. Thank you for all your hard work and your dedication.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. But we're all in a battle today for America and to save our republic. So each of us have to get up every day and figure out how to take America back from all the scandals and everything that's happening in Washington and get back to our local communities and work with the people that need help and assistance and create jobs and do it the old-fashioned American way. And get rid of these partisan politics that are just ruining our country.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. They're all Republicrats. You know, politicians can't be slaves to two masters. They can't listen to the needs of their constituents when they have the leadership of their respective political parties standing over them with a cattle prod.
Well, that's one of the reasons in our Americans Project that we recommended that all congressmen and all senators term limits. And we're recommending two 6-year terms for our senators and 2 4-year terms for our congressmen, and then that's it, and also a 10-year term for the Supreme Court judges. Nobody gets tenure. Nobody gets lifetime appointments. The other thing is, Michael, which is interesting, as we've gone around the country, the interest in the American people is saying, why are our congressmen and senators in the states 2/3 of the year, in other words, 2/3 out of every month, they should be in their home states working with the people rather than sitting in Washington trying to legislate and regulate because we can do so many things digitally today, and they can work in their states, really understand what's going on. So those are very serious changes that can and should be made.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about tenure, and I just had this very glib thought flash through my feeble brain. You know, Nomex racing suits that race drivers and test pilots wear should be fireproof, but not our elected representatives. How do you like that?
Yeah, I like that. That's a good comparison. But it is true. They should stay in their states. They don't need to have all these fancy homes in both places. And, you know, the other thing is about that recommendation we're making from Stand Up America, the Americans Project, is that also that they vow to delegislate and deregulate the federal government. And it's not about legislation and regulation anymore. It's about delegislation and deregulation.
Yep.
And taking out the complexity of our government, cutting it back. We also found out, Michael, 47% of our government could be done away with, and we wouldn't miss it.
That's really amazing. You know, these bureaucracies that have a life of their own so that people can do empire building, justify the pay grades. You know, it's so funny you talk about a federal case. If you look at the way the federal government pursues prosecutions, the more complex you make it, the more you justify the pay grades, where in the private sector, you get rewarded for finding simple solutions to complex problems, and the federal government is finding complex solutions to simple problems. Look at the immigration crisis created by the administration, aided and abetted by the politicians from both sides of the aisle. They want to write more laws really as a subterfuge to destroy the middle class and along with it national security. But, you know, if there's a problem where people are doing something illegal, wouldn't you think the solution is to deter, not encourage and enable? And if you look at comprehensive reform, it's all about encouraging, enabling and rewarding, when they should be talking about how to put the onus back on the illegal alien and the people who facilitate whatever it is they do in our country in violation of law, rather than saying, well, obviously the solution is give them what they wanted when they ran the borders in the first place. Doesn't this defy common sense? You know, when I was a kid, my mom would say to me when they did something really screwed up, wait till your father comes home. And I knew that when he came home, he wasn't about to take me out to dinner and pizza or a movie and pizza. I was about to have my head handed to me. So how does it make sense to reward people for doing something wrong?
Well, I don't know whether you saw the release today, but I think it was $450 million in bonuses to the senior executive levels and upper management in the IRS. $450 million.
These guys had nothing to do with computer hard drives, did they?
Well,
what do you make of that? Is that unbelievable?
Well, I hope that's the right message I got. I don't think it was the VA. They got a lot, but I think I heard it was the IRS.
No, I didn't. No, what I'm thinking about, though, is this ongoing saga, the soap opera of somebody ate my hard drive. You know, my dog ate my homework. Well, maybe my dog ate my hard drive. There are now, it's not just the head of the IRS. Now there's six more hard drives that somehow got so screwed up that they can't find the hard drives. They were destroyed. They were recycled. I mean, wow. I mean, this doesn't hold a drop of water. How in the world do they do this? And where do we go from here with that kind of contempt for the process, for the government, for the American people?
Well, it is a contempt. This John McCormick, who was reporting from the Weekly Standard today, interesting report about the IRS chief. He won't apologize. He says, what should I apologize for? We haven't done anything. So it's negligence, incompetence, it's arrogance that I have seen across the board in all of the agencies now at the federal government, a tremendous air of arrogance among the people. But anyhow, Mike, I think we need to look at the entire spectrum of new government leaders that can come in and delegislate, deregulate, get this government simplified to the point that we can unleash this country again in the private sector. We have so many jobs that people, yes, I'm out looking for a job, but I'm looking for a better one because our economy is booming so much.
Right.
Those are the things that we have to do. We have no forward strategy when it comes to the international scene, when it comes to what's happening now, as we see in Russia, in the Middle East, in Iraq. They seem to be incapable of what we called at West Point forward strategy. Michael, let me go back to one other point. Do you remember management by objectives back in the 70s and 80s? It was a excellence in management, MBO,
right,
they called it.
Yes.
You remember that? And they introduced it into all the government agencies.
Yep.
They were also there to plan and do this management by objectives. Well, I wrote a paper in 1980 at the Army War College, and I called it MBS, Management by Simplification. And I don't know why I remembered that and why I even wrote that in 1980. Anyhow, it's in the archive somewhere.
Did your wife Muffin buy you a crystal ball, perhaps, that you had looked into?
Well, I don't know. Maybe she did. But it's funny, I just started remembering that again. It's one of those papers and things you're tested to do, whether you're working on your bachelor's degree or master's or doctor's. You know, you got to write papers. How intuitive was even back then that we should be managing the Army, and that's what it was about, by simplification, because the Army was getting too complex to run and to manage.
And where is it today, in your judgment?
Oh, my goodness, 10 times worse.
It's remarkable. And then we look at the crisis in Iraq, and you and I have been speaking about this past week. What are your thoughts about this meltdown in Iraq? And, you know, for a little bit of background to the audience, I told you when I was up at DEA Intelligence back in the late 80s when Desert Storm was underway, we were told by the people we were working with, because, you know, everybody does share intel, so we were working with military intelligence and the folks over at Langley and so forth, and we were told that the orders had been given to General Schwarzkopf to not march into Baghdad because chaos would ensue, which is where I guess we are now. So what are your thoughts about going into Baghdad, taking out Saddam Hussein, and all that has followed since then?
Well, as I reflect back, of course, I covered both the campaigns in Afghanistan beginning in 2001 when I was a senior military analyst for Fox News. So I was covering that each and every day. And then, of course, when Bush ordered the march to Baghdad in the March-April timeframe of 2003, I think many of us were convinced at that time. Of course, Saddam is a bad guy. They were reporting weapons of mass destruction. They were reporting support of terrorist groups, that in the aftermath of 9/11, it was justified to go in and to remove Saddam Hussein. So at that time, there was a lot of misunderstanding of intelligence or misinterpretation. But when I reflect back now, Iraq was never a threat to the United States. I went over in August of 2003. That country was so poor, and so unable to conduct any kind of operation like that other than through a terrorist cell or something. Of course, that could have occurred from any country.
Right.
But the strategy was always against these terrorists and al-Qaeda types. It was unconventional. And we try to fight the wars conventional in Iraq and Afghanistan. This coin strategy, the counterinsurgencies, never worked other than maybe a case in Malaysia by the British. And I've studied this warfare for a long time, Michael. And I'm the one that wrote the lily pad strategy and tried to introduce it into the Pentagon, where with our high-tech capability today, our ability to move around the world with our lily pads, our aircraft carrier groups, our forward bases, the ability of the jet aircraft to take our people anywhere, anytime, that we could attack a target based on good intelligence anywhere, anytime, 24 hours a day. But yet we go in, and I was warned by Colonel Naji Najjar, my Middle East advisor. Back in the early 2000s, he said, "General Valley, tell the generals and admirals in the Pentagon, don't put any bases in the Middle East." He said, "The Middle East is a giant sponge. It'll soak up every human resource and financial resource you put into it." And by goodness, he was right. And if we were going to fight this, we could have done it with special operations forces and air power using the lily pad strategies, the Rangers, other elements of the Navy SEALs, Air Force Special Operations to take care of these targets that were a threat to the United States. But what do? We put in bases. We put in people who have to run these convoys, tremendous logistics base, and we create such a big target unnecessarily. And so now we have Iraq today where we pulled out. We didn't have a status of forces agreement, but yet we built one of the biggest embassies that we have in the entire world in Baghdad. And so with some almost 5,000 people there a few weeks ago,
wow,
and with the march of ISIS from eastern Syria, down the beltway there from Mosul to Crete to north of Baghdad, situation's been created now where we still have Americans in harm's way there. So my priority, Mike, would be provide air power over there, take out, and we can target. We can put one of our bombs down a smokestack so they can be very accurate. We don't have to bomb the major metropolitan areas, but you can bomb those convoys and targets and be very selective about it.
You don't need a sledgehammer. You have a scalpel, I guess.
Yeah, very precision type.
And this almost sounds like what the administration is now talking about now with everything that's falling apart in Iraq.
Yeah, talking about doing nothing.
Well, I agree. It's probably going to be mostly talk. And then, of course, they capture the guy. The timing was amazing. One of the players involved with the death of our ambassador. You know, it's just so incredible to me the way that the use of language is being used to propagandize everything. Absolutely amazing. I mean, this goes back to, you know, Bill Clinton trying to redefine the definition of the word "is," taken exponentially to a whole new level. I've never seen the use of language the way we're seeing it today.
Did you see the latest proposal? They're going to take Harry Reid, Joe Biden, and Obama and Nancy Pelosi, and they're going to trade them for the Marine in Mexico.
Well, you know what? Mexico's getting the short end of the deal.
Now, here's another interesting thing. Obama met with the president of Mexico today, did not even mention the Marine that's being held in Tijuana.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, didn't even mention it, didn't even bring it up. But yet he traded off five very high-level type Taliban, Al-Qaeda type back to Qatar. I mean, what is this White House and national security team up to? I mean, it's just incredible. They all should be fired, in my opinion. All should be fired tomorrow.
Look, I can't agree with you more. I mean, this is crazy stuff. I keep coming back to George Orwell. You know, I'm looking at some of the Orwell quotes. I got to tell you, the guy is brilliant.
Yes.
One of the things he said, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. How does that work for you?
Oh, boy, yeah. But, you know, the other thing, Michael, is that this is not politics. As Gerald Sisi told me a month and a half ago when I was over there, the new president of Egypt, he said, you know, right. We deal in realities. You Americans don't seem to deal in the realities of the world anymore. You deal in ideology. You deal in partisan politics. And that's what we've got to do is have people in our government who deal with the realities of what's going on in the world. And
well, you know,
the politics is just killing us, and political correction is just killing this country.
Well, you know, it's so remarkable. After the 93 terror attacks, and, you know, there were two of them here in the United States. First, we had the attack at the CIA by this guy, Amil Kansi, who shot up the CIA, a Pakistani national, applies for political asylum, lies through his teeth. A month later, the first attack at the Trade Center, 6 people dead, 1,000 injured, almost brought the towers down. And a couple of months later, I got a phone call from the Israeli police general here in New York City because, you know, back in 1976, I tripped over a terrorist plot to blow up the oil refinery at Haifa. We prevented the attack, so from that day on, as you might imagine, I had a wonderful working relationship with the Israeli National Police that lasted the balance of my career. And the general called me up, and he said, Mike, we have to have lunch. I'm really concerned. So I jumped in my car. I went to Midtown Manhattan up to the Israeli consulate. We went to a nice, quiet restaurant, got a table in the back somewhere. And he said, I don't know what's wrong with your government. He said, Israel loves the United States. We think of you as our big brother. He said, compared to America, Israel is the size of the state of New Jersey. But he said, they just had a meeting in Washington. They brought in all the allies, Canada and Israel and Germany and Great Britain and France and several other countries. And it was about what we plan to do by the year 2000 in terms of securing America from the threat of terrorism and for purposes of national security. And he said, Mike, how in the world do you say in the same sentence, national security, and in 6 years? He said, in Israel, when we have a meeting about national security, they want to know, what are you going to do in 6 minutes? What are you going to do when you walk out of the room? What are you going to do in 6 days? He said, if you're buying airplanes and building facilities and a real major operation, they may give you 6 months, but no more than that. He said, to talk about 6 years and they almost brought down the World Trade Center and the Central Intelligence Agency was attacked. He said, the mindset of your country that you're a superpower and untouchable, I fear, will get a lot of Americans killed down the road. He said, is there any way you can convey this to anybody? I said, no, we've been banging our head against the wall as well. And, you know, it was so remarkable, and this isn't about partisanship. I'm a registered Democrat, but the Democrats controlled the House. They would not hold a hearing on those attacks. The hearing finally came on May 20th, 1997. I was one of a bunch of witnesses called about the issue of visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud. Nothing was done to address that. This was 4.5 years after those attacks, 4.5 years before 9/11. 9/11 happened, and the first thought that flashed through my brain was sitting at that hearing in Washington 4.5 years earlier and realizing, oh, my God, if they had listened, this could not have happened.
Yeah, that's
and
the
here
problem.
We are again.
Yeah, we don't
see, they
listen.
Don't need
hearings.
They need listenings. They need listenings.
Absolutely. Need to learn how to listen. And that's what I noticed about the general staff and the principal government leaders over in Egypt. They listened. They were not arrogant. When we talked, we listened. When we talked, they listened. It was very good. Michael, I've got to leave in 5 minutes for their premiere showing tonight of America, Dinesh D'Souza's new documentary with our good friend Jerry Mullen. They're
That's
having a
awesome.
Special premiere today for 100 of us. So I've got
wow.
even 5 minutes to do that. But America will be out in the movie theaters, I understand, July 2nd.
I'd love the privilege at some point of speaking to those two guys. What they've been doing in terms of getting information out there is marvelous, amazing. What you're doing is incredible. Can you give everybody your website just so they can check this out? Check this out over the weekend, folks.
Absolutely. Go to www.standupamericaus.org. Standupamericaus.org. And you'll find all of our postings there. And as I told you before, Michael, feel free to use any of our postings on that site for your own show or anything you would like to use it for when you give your talks around the country. But, Mike, thank you for doing all the work you do. You're the best I know of in the entire country on the issue of immigration. I don't know anybody that's more articulate or knowledgeable than you.
Well, coming from somebody with your creds, I can't tell you how honored I am. I really appreciate it. And, well, you know what my thoughts are about your dedication, your talent, your ability, and your integrity, by the way. So I thank you as well. For those of you out there, if you haven't figured it out, we have a mutual admiration society, I think.
Well, at least we have one friend, right? Each other.
Say again?
At least we have one friend, each other.
Absolutely, and you're the best kind of friend to have, Paul, and I really value our friendship. And I hope you have
much.
A terrific weekend, and let's chat next week. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program this evening. It's always a pleasure
okay.
and a privilege to have you.
Take care.
Okay. Well, that was Major General Paul Vallely, who was able to spend some time with us as he's on his way to see a film this evening, America, a great film, a great bunch of folks putting it together. General Vallely has certainly served this country time and time again and continues to serve America, provide his invaluable insight based on experience, not nonsense. You know, it's remarkable. This has been a crazy, crazy week. You know, the immigration crisis has been ongoing. And it's remarkable that no one pays attention to it until something really unbelievable happens. And what's unbelievable, of course, is that our borders are now being flooded. It almost looks like the scene that you see in images around the world when there's a war somewhere and the refugees start heading across borders. Well, these folks that are headed this way are being pushed by poverty and violence in their home countries, but they're also being pulled. They're being pulled by this administration. They're being pulled by the Democrats in Washington calling for comprehensive reform and a promise of citizenship. They're being pulled by the Republicans who are offering much the same thing. They're being pulled by people on both sides of the aisle because this is about cheap labor. It's about making a lot of money for people who depend on the movement of money, the movement of people, the movement of goods. Look, trade is important. Trade motivates an awful lot. We always heard the story about Columbus discovered the New World. He was looking for a trade route to India, you know, trade. No problem there. Even as kids, we traded baseball cards, and I remember they used to have space cards. We traded. Trade is normal. It's healthy. It's the way to generate and stimulate business. However, it's one thing to be a trader and something quite different to be a traitor. If you are willing, in the interest of trade, to undermine the national security of your country, then you go from being a traitor to being a traitor. Because this is a treacherous slope that we stand on, because that border of this country is our first and last line of defense against terrorists from other countries, transnational criminals, aliens with dangerous diseases, the flow of narcotics. Those borders are vital. You cannot defend the country, unless you defend your borders and unless you make certain that the enemies of your country have no opportunity to gain entry. You know, on the small level, we do this as homeowners. You buy locks and burglar alarms and you put up lighting. And, you know, people put their lights on timers to give the illusion that there's somebody home at all times. And, you know, think about watchdogs. We were talking about my poor pup, Herbie, who died this week. You know, he was a great watchdog, wouldn't let anyone get near the house without barking and letting us know. This is something that makes you feel more safe, more secure. It's a warning system to say, hey, somebody's up, somebody's out there, we got to be careful. That's what the immigration laws are about. They have nothing to do with race, nothing to do with religion, nothing to do with ethnicity. It's about protecting innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. And yet you have politicians making these unbelievable statements. Oh, my God, we got to bring in the best and brightest. America needs to be successful. Well, you know what, ladies and gentlemen? I don't know about you, but I grew up believing that when we were talking about the world's best and the world's brightest, we had one word to describe those folks. They were called Americans. It was America that built the Panama Canal. It was America that got the atom bomb built. It was America that broke the sound barrier, Chuck Yeager flying the X-1. It was America who landed men on the moon. America, the best and the brightest. And now you've got these people in business who are saying, well, maybe we can get rid of those Americans because they expect decent wages. Let's figure out how we can get people here from India and other countries who we can pay garbage wages to, work their tails off, not have to worry about 401k programs, and put more money in our pockets. And God only knows when you're a gazillionaire like Gates, like Zuckerberg, like Bloomberg, certainly, the one thing you need more is money because you're starving. I mean, how in the world do you get by on a mere, you know, several tens of billions of dollars? I mean, I'm sure they're awake at night worrying how they're going to pay for hamburger the next day. It's an obscenity. They are in a feeding frenzy. They're gorging themselves, and what they're ultimately gorging themselves on is the survival of our country, the survival of American citizens, the survival of America's middle class. But they don't care. It doesn't matter to them because they are grammatically challenged. They are only able to conjugate verbs in the first person singular. But if you want to talk about people that can only think about me, myself, and I, what in the world is wrong with our average American? When they listen to these arguments that are about as dopey as they get, and the average American just scratches his head and says, well, I guess that must be right. They keep saying it. See, that was the technique used by the Third Reich during the Holocaust, during the Second World War. You tell a lie, but you get people to believe it by repeating it every single time. And they're all reading off the same sheet of music. We can't deport 11 million, so we may as well give them citizenship. What does that mean? So now that more have come here, does that mean that the argument is even stronger? Why don't we just declare everybody born on the planet Earth to be a citizen of the United States? Let's get rid of all of the Border Patrol agents. Let's get rid of all the inspectors at ports of entry. And let's give anybody who wants an identity document in any name without verifying their name the identity document. Better yet, why don't we just issue driver's licenses to people that simply says either John Doe or Bera, B-E-R-A. A-R-E-R, bearer. Whoever it is that has the card, that's his. This is as stupid as it gets. This flies in the face of common sense. It flies in the face of the recommendations and findings of the 9/11 Commission. And when you confront these politicians, and I have, and I'll have more to say about that in the coming weeks, about a couple of these individual politicians who I've spoken with, how in the world do they not have the integrity to answer one question that you and I and every living, breathing American should be asking these alleged representatives of we the people? How dare you concoct immigration legislation? How dare you, while you ignore the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? How in the world do you do that? The reason for the 9/11 Commission was to make certain we would find out how the terrorists were able to get into the country and hide themselves in our country, that process being referred to by the 9/11 Commission as the embedding process. How in the world do they turn around and refuse to answer the most fundamental of questions? Why aren't you giving thought to the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? It's a very simple question. We keep on talking about the threat of terrorism. The NSA trampled on the Fourth Amendment, shredded the Fourth Amendment, made believe there was no Fourth Amendment. The way they conducted themselves, you would never know that they had a charter that said they're not supposed to be spying on Americans. They're not supposed to operate in the United States. Every time, forgive me, I have a frog in my throat. Today, I think this is my seventh radio program. I sent out or sixth radio show this evening. I sent out a notice earlier about three shows today, and I've done several in addition to where people simply called up because of the craziness going on the border. So my throat's about to pack up and go on vacation, I think. But, you know, the idea that we have elected representatives who took an oath to secure the country, protect the citizens, and they are ignoring their oath, they're ignoring the way that the NSA ignored its charter and violated, it would seem, the law, and then they won't talk about national security. Will not allow the conversation to take place. Will not. Never mind that the 9/11 Commission and 9/11 Commission staff made it clear that obviously the terrorists couldn't have attacked us if they couldn't have come here. The 9/11 Commission talked about how the visa process by which we gave visas to the terrorists was flawed, that we need to be more careful about how we give out visas. So guess what our government did in the wake of the 9/11 Commission findings, which were supposed to be a blueprint, a roadmap, a set of instructions of how to make America safe. They said, be careful about the way you give out visas. On 9/11, there were 26 visa waiver countries. So 9/11 was more than 13 years ago, okay, or almost 13 years ago, doing the math. We now have 38 visa waiver countries. We've added a dozen visa waiver countries to the list of the visa waivers at a time after the 9/11 Commission said you got to tighten up on visa issuance. What's happening is the Chamber of Commerce, I call them the Chamber of Horrors, the national chamber. There are some local chambers that are real good because they understand the damage was done in their own communities. But in Washington, they are out of control. And the National Chamber of Commerce, and I would remind you, they beat the snot out of Ralph Nader way back when Ralph Nader recognized there were problems with the auto industry. They sent Nader hookers, and they tried to do all kinds of things to besmirch his reputation. And no matter what they tried, it didn't work. But, you know, people that say, well, I'm a liberal, and I consider myself a liberal. Well, if you're a liberal, look at what they did to Ralph Nader, the ultimate consumerist. They wanted to shred him. Are these the people you want to work with? Because it's the Chamber of Commerce that's spending probably some of the biggest pay stubs or paychecks to the politicians for taking down our borders. Understand who they are. It's the Chamber of Commerce when they created the Discover America partnership that led to this increase in the number of visa waiver countries. And the Chamber of Commerce partnered with the hotel, hospitality, travel industries, and the manufacturing associations to create the Discover America partnership, obviously neglecting and ignoring the fact that Al-Qaeda has already discovered America. Doesn't it make you sleep the sleep of angels knowing that we have national security decisions being made by people who are supposed to be in charge of room service? And when we get to the point of room service, we are, of course, compelled to turn our attention south to the Mexican border, where we're being inundated. And what's remarkable about CAPS, they've been leading the charge for weeks, months, if you will, about what was going on the border. It was CAPS that called attention to the amount of salaries, the way they're dropping in the face of foreign competition, especially America's minorities. That's why I write for them. That's why the other people write for them. See, immigration is supposed to be compassionate. It's supposed to be compassionate for Americans. When I spoke at the Tea Party convention, and that's why we've got to stop vilifying each other, by the way. I have neighbors who would say to me, the Tea Party, oh, those people are crazy. I said, well, let me tell you how crazy they are. 3 years in a row, they invited me down to speak. 3 years in a row, they gave me prime time slots, presidential candidates. When I was there the first time 3 years ago in Myrtle Beach in January, Santorum spoke, Gingrich spoke. I went up on stage right after Gingrich, and they gave me 25 minutes. Do you think some liberal group would allow a conservative to do that? What they did made me very proud, proud of them and proud to be an American. See, the founding fathers talked about the right for peaceable assemblage in the First Amendment, because everybody rattles off freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. But this business about the right to seek redress of grievances, and boy, do we have a load of them, and the right for peaceable assemblage was all about debate, discussion, and if need be, argument. They just said, don't hurt each other. But have at it. Have those debates. Have those, if need be, screaming matches. That's how you really understand the issue. I was a communications arts and sciences major, or as I prefer to say, I have a BA in BS. I was going to teach debate. I don't think anybody should get a high school diploma or a college degree without spending a full year on a debating team. You don't know your side of the argument better than when you have to defend it against your opponent. And in fact, most of my coaches would not tell us which side of the argument we were going to be on until 15 or 30 minutes before the debate, so that we had to understand as much of the overall issue as possible. This narrow-mindedness is dangerous. You know, look at the average talk show. You have conservative moderators with conservative guests talking to a conservative audience on one hand. You have a liberal moderator with liberal guests talking to a liberal audience on the other, and nobody even knows that there's another side to the story. And when they encounter somebody from the other side, it's like the Bloods and Crips. Everybody wants to go for knives and guns after each other, and the name-calling starts, and the vilification starts. Why? Why on earth do you think that an American, a fellow citizen of this great nation, who disagrees with you is your enemy? I can't tell you how proud I am that Major General Vallely is truly a friend. I have many great friends, but he's one of them. And General Vallely is a conservative. He's a very strong conservative. He knows I'm a lifelong Democrat. And General Vallely could not be more respectful of me, and I could not be more respectful of him. That's how you honor democracy. That's how you pay homage to America, because that's what America was always about. When I grew up, I had great friends who were on both political parties. I remember one time I was in Arizona with Don Goldwater. Don ran for governor of Arizona. His uncle was Barry Goldwater, presidential candidate and senator. And as we're driving through Arizona, it was a beautiful day, and we're in his SUV, his truck, I believe it was, actually. Don said, Mike, I got to tell you a story. He said, you know, when I was a kid, I showed up at my Uncle Barry's house, and I walked in, and guess who's sitting on the couch having drinks with my uncle? I said, who? He said, Hubert Humphrey. And he said he almost fell over, because here's Hubert Humphrey. He was the vice president on the Democrat ticket. And he said to his uncle, what's he doing here? And Barry Goldwater's response was to say to him, Hubert Humphrey might be a Democrat, but he's a great American, and he's one of my close friends. See, this idea that we vilify each other is dangerous, because while we're busy fighting with each other, the crooks in Washington are robbing us deaf, dumb, and blind. They want us at each other's throats. So while we're fighting each other, we're ignoring the real danger. The real danger are those people in Washington spewing lies, my goodness, the way that a thunderstorm spews lightning and heavy rain. And, you know, here's a wonderful quote from George Orwell. I just love what he writes. Here's one of the things that he said. Political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind. Goodness gracious, I got to repeat that. George Orwell, the author of 1984, said, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind. Well, let me ask you this, ladies and gentlemen. Isn't that what we're getting? Look at these lies. Look at these absurd arguments. We're being told we can't deport 11 million, so the only viable option is to give them lawful status, maybe citizenship. You know, this makes about as much sense as telling the police that if you find somebody speeding and they're driving around in an oldish car, since they're going to speed anyway, obviously the solution is to give them a Corvette, because the Corvette is designed to be driven more quickly, so they will continue to speed, but at least now they will speed more safely. Does that make any sense to anybody out there? That's what they're doing. It's the craziest argument. Several years ago, the New York State Senate stood poised to provide illegal aliens with driver's licenses. I went to Albany to testify. And the two big arguments that we heard, well, these people are going to drive anyway, so now they'll drive safely and have insurance if they have a license. And the fact that they're here represents a failure of the federal government, and if the feds aren't going to do something about it, that's not our problem. So I got up, and they cut the amount of time I had real quickly because they didn't want anybody speaking up who would oppose giving the licenses. I mean, you know, God help you if you want to do something right. And here was my argument. I said, if you want to use that word anyway, let's remember that people commit crimes anyway. If you don't believe it, go to the prisons. You're going to get to see them. And some of these folks got real creative in order to violate the law. If you don't believe it, read their arrest reports or watch that TV show, Cops. Some of these people are real stupid, but some of them are pretty slick and creative. You could really be entertained seeing what it is that some of these knuckleheads did to qualify for free room and board at the Gray Bar Inn. So let's go a step further. Convicted felons are going to carry firearms anyway. So by the reasoning of the folks that want to give illegal aliens driver's licenses, I would argue that the way to deal with convicted felons, since they're going to carry firearms anyway, is to provide them all with carry permits, decent weapons, and training. If you could improve their accuracy when they fire their weapons, they would be much less likely to hit an innocent bystander if they were involved in a shootout or a drive-by. Maybe you could even convince them to use trigger locks between crimes. Do you realize how much you will have improved public safety by giving carry permits to convicted felons now? Now, this other argument, the other argument, that this is a federal responsibility. Well, they got me there. Absolutely, they're right. I mean, how many hearings have I testified before? How many? I wish they had listings, by the way. But how many hearings, you know, where I've said, boy, the federal government is failing in its mission. So they're right. This does represent a failure of the federal government. So I had another proposition. I said, you know what? The same borders that provide access to the illegal aliens provide access to the narcotics. So I asked rhetorically, how many members of the New York State Senate, by a show of hands, is willing to vote for an immediate cessation to all state and local investigations of narcotics and related crimes? I thought it was a fair question. If you don't want to be involved in the fallout from the failure to secure the border where it results in illegal aliens crossing the border, then you should similarly not want to be involved in going after the drugs that also come across that border. Fair is fair. Do you know that just about every Democrat member of the New York State Senate got up and left? It looked like a fire drill. I was supposed to get a video of the hearing. I think that the same IT people that took care of the IRS computers took care of the video because nobody, but nobody could find it. But it's lie after lie, and most people don't even know they're being lied to. I mean, really, folks, maybe instead of looking for ID before we allow people to vote, maybe we should be checking for a flatline EEG. Maybe they're brain dead. You know, we heard the other argument. Well, we're fighting them over there, meaning the terrorists, so we don't have to fight them over here. We heard it from everybody. We heard it from Giuliani. We heard it from George Bush. We heard it from Barack Obama. We heard it from John McCain. We're fighting them over there, so we don't have to fight them over here. Okay, so let's put on our thinking caps, and here's the question of the evening. Where's the World Trade Center located, or where was it located? Where's Manhattan? Where's Shanksville, Pennsylvania? Where's the Pentagon? What foreign country? What in the world do you mean we're fighting them over there? Folks, we're fighting them over here. But it was a slogan, just like Winston tastes good like a cigarette should, and how many people develop lung cancer, emphysema, and heart disease because of that dumbass slogan. We are a nation of slogans, sound bites, 10-word phrases, foolishness and stupidity. I did an interview yesterday on Newsmax with J.D. J.D. is a former member of the United States Congress, and in fact, he was there when I testified before the House Immigration Reform Caucus 6 weeks after 9/11, when I wound up getting removed the next day. They told me it was because of my injured leg. We know it was because, in fact, I testified before Congress without authority. So we did this wonderful interview on Newsmax. And you know what's amazing? It wasn't a food fight. I didn't have to argue with anybody. I was interviewed by two people, and it lasted 10 minutes plus. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net. It's posted. I suspect CAPS will be putting it up on the capsweb.org website. You know, this idea of an actual 10-minute-plus conversation, it was calm, it was peaceful, it was fact-based. We had the time to really speak with each other, not bark at each other. That is how an interview is supposed to be done. This isn't entertainment, folks. This is supposed to be a learning experience. It's supposed to be an opportunity to walk away from that television knowing more than when you first sat down. That's the goal, you would think. You would think. But today, TV is about spewing propaganda. Today, programming is the filler between the commercials, because the TV exists for the commercials, because that's where the money is. That's why when you have multilingual, multi-language networks, they want to have more foreign nationals in the United States, so the foreign nationals will go to their program and they can charge more for billable hours, for the airtime, for the commercials. Look, I'm all about the profit motive. I get it. But America's survival should be the priority for everybody. The priority for everybody. You know, a country without secure borders can no more stand than can a house without walls. And we hear this nonsense constantly. We need to bring in the best and brightest. Oh, the illegals do the work Americans won't do. Really? Study after study after study confirms the same fundamental underlying fact that Americans are the most productive workers in the world. But yet, what do we hear? Oh, the folks from other countries are harder working. No, they're not. The only thing extraordinary about foreign workers is they will work for extraordinarily low wages under extraordinarily unacceptable conditions. That's what makes them extraordinary. So you listen to the politicians, and some of whom, by the way, are immigration lawyers. Think about that, you know. Think about that. If you're an immigration lawyer and you vote for comprehensive immigration reform, you're really voting to pad your own nest, okay? Because that means you want to have more clientele in this country for you and your buddies. That's what this is about. You know, when I was a kid, they used to use the term ambulance chaser. And what did it mean? There were literally lawyers that would see a car crash or a pedestrian get hurt or whatever, a slip and fall, and they'd run up to the person and say, "Wow, you were hurt. I'm a lawyer. Maybe we can sue somebody." You know, they call them ambulance chasers. I remember I was at my synagogue one day, and one of the people I was very friendly with, he was the president of the synagogue, and he was talking to me. We're having this great conversation, and suddenly this elderly woman comes in to the into the sanctuary of the synagogue, and she's got a bandage on her leg, and she's on crutches. And the guy was jumping over people to get to her. He excused himself. He said, "Mike, I'll be right back. Give me a minute. Give me a minute." And he runs up to her. It was almost funny, but not really. And he said, "Where did you fall down? Where did you fall down?" And it turned out that she had to have surgery on her leg for something that didn't involve any kind of an accident. And he was just so crestfallen. You know, he had just been told that the tooth fairy was make-believe. And he came back to me looking very disappointed. And he said, "What were you saying, Mike?" "Well, we're seeing that same kind of nonsense from members of Congress who are immigration lawyers, because they look at that border and they see the people headed this way and the dollar signs are rolling around in their eyes. Clients, customers." You know, how many times have you listened to a program on the radio and they announce some restaurant is opening or they're having their 10th anniversary or whatever, and they say, "And when you go to Francesco's restaurant, tell them you heard it here and have a glass of wine on the house." Well, why do you think they do that? Because that's a way of knowing what brought that customer into that restaurant. And that's the way of letting them know, hey, it was the radio station. So they're happy to pay for the glass of wine because this shows them that the ad campaign was effective. The ad campaign that's being run by the administration and by members of both parties is very effective. How do we know? Look at the Mexican border. It is so effective that we don't know where to put all these customers. Illegal aliens. Do you see what is happening? Do you see what is happening? These individuals are putting their own self-interests, conflicts of interest, if you will, ahead of America and Americans. They are grammatically challenged. They conjugate verbs in the first person singular. The three most important people they know, me, myself, and I. So when they stand there and say, "Well, we can't deport these people," they certainly don't want you to. Why would they want you to get rid of their clients? Why would they want you to get rid of their paycheck? You see? Nobody wants to give away business, and they see business headed this way. And I see monkey business heading this way, you know, a travesty, a sham. That's what this is. And, of course, every time I think about monkey business, I think about Gary Hart, the guy that was running for president and was accused of philandering on the side. And he said, "Well, if you guys followed me around, you would see that I'm not doing anything wrong." And the next weekend, he's on a boat with this very pretty young model. I can't recall her name, but she was half his age. Very pretty blonde little girl. And the name of the boat that they caught him on was called the Monkey Business. How apt was that? So this is wherein lies the problem. These people will do anything, and I do mean anything, for the dollar. It's kind of like the oldest profession, you know. That's the difference between, you know, a girl out on a date or a prostitute. It's about the girl that's on a date just wants to have the companionship of the guy that she's with. The hooker wants the money. And that's what has people upset, that you're taking what should be a nice relationship between two consenting adults and turning it into a business transaction. And that's kind of unseemly, you know. So we get to all of these issues. And you say to yourself that really what we're dealing with are prostitutes and politicians, and increasingly it's more and more difficult to find a difference between the two of them. How in the world do you justify what you do just for the dollar when you know you're inflicting so much damage on America and Americans? It's disloyal to the country, and you're doing damage to the people who voted you into office. I can't imagine a more despicable set of circumstances. And a while back, I was in Washington to deliver a speech. And by the way, if any of you folks are familiar with opportunities for me to get my word out there, you can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. Be delighted to participate in panel discussions, debates, that sort of thing. give me a holler on my website, or you can go to capsweb.org, tell them you need to get a hold of me. But here's something that I prepared for an event that I did in D.C. about a year, year and a half ago. I hope you find it enjoyable. The similarity between politics and prostitution, the two oldest professions. Both professions begin with the letter P. Both professions involve lots of people getting screwed. In both professions, the practitioners will assume any position, no matter how ridiculous, uncomfortable, or contrary to common sense, price. In prostitution, the clientele bring their fantasies that the prostitute tries to fulfill. In politics, the constituents bring their concerns, and the politicians respond by making promises they fulfill by creating fantasies. STDs can give the clients of prostitutes a case of buyer's remorse, or perhaps a case of something else, while voters may well suffer buyer's remorse when they come to find out what their elected official does once he or she is sworn into office. Talk about the gift that keeps on giving. And that's really where we are, because anybody who is honest and sincere and reasonable has to understand the true importance of our immigration laws and our borders. I don't think that these people are so stupid that they don't get it. I think that they lack a moral compass. And the American people who are out there not paying attention, not engaging their politicians in discussion, afraid to be heard. You know, I spoke before a group of men who were part of a men's club at a synagogue, and this old gentleman, gosh, the guy had to be close to 80, said to me, "Mr. Cutler, you're asking me to go to my member of Congress, and what if I make them angry? What might they do to me?" I said, "You're 80 years old and you're worried what they're going to do to you?" I said, "Do you know that that member of Congress works for you?" And he and a few other people were scared to death at the notion that he might upset a politician who might get even with him. You know, that kind of thinking worries me. You might expect to hear that kind of garbage in some totalitarian country, and maybe we're headed that way, but I will guarantee you that we're headed that way if we don't stand up. If we don't stand up to these buffoons, these bags of hot air, and tell them, "Listen, we're on to you, and you're going to knock it off or else." If a doctor injures or kills a patient because they did something wrong, it's called malpractice, they get sued, they stand to lose their jobs, as well as their homes, and maybe go to jail. Think of Michael Jackson's doctor being put on trial. This is not uncommon. If you're in a car accident and you're caught doing something really off the wall, not only will you lose your license, but you can go to jail and you can be sued. It's about accountability and responsibility. Lawyers can be disbarred. But it seems as though it takes an act of God to get rid of some god-awful politician in Washington. I don't know if I agree with General Vallely about term limits. I certainly understand the case that he makes for it. I always thought that term limits were determined in the voting booth, but too many of our fellow Americans are missing in action and not involved with the process and not getting their voices heard. And we're all being hurt by that. You know, it's really important to stand up. It's important to have our voices heard. It's important to let the politicians know that we're not as stupid as they thought we are. And that's why I write my commentaries. That's why I keep asking you whenever I get on the air, wherever I am, whether it's my own program or on other shows, I always like to remind people about my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, the other organizations I write for, Front Page Magazine. And I just had an article published last weekend in American Currency, which is a subsidiary of the Washington Times. Dr. Ben Carson, believe it or not, is the founder of the magazine. And my friend and radio talk show host and media entrepreneur Armstrong Williams is the executive editor, and I was thrilled to do the cover story for them last week. This is about trying to provide all of you with the information that the mainstream media refuses to discuss. I keep thinking about Jack Nicholson playing the role of that commandant in the Marine Corps and that famous court-martial scene, you know, "You can't handle the truth." The problem is they can't handle us having the truth. And that's what this program is about. That is what my work has been about ever since the terror attacks of 9/11, to provide you with the insight based on my many years of experience as an agent, as an inspector, as an adjudications officer, as an American citizen, and as someone who has become, who's gotten, I guess, knee-deep or higher in the political process. This is important stuff, folks. I know everybody has a lot to, on their plate, and weekend is coming up, and last weekend was Father's Day, and we have kids going off to school, and people are buying homes, and all kinds of stuff. And it's a lot of fun to go to a ball game, a movie, or a show. But this business about politics, folks, and government may not be sexy, it may not be exciting, but at the end of the day, the survival of America and the survival of Americans hang in the balance. Hang in the balance. So it's vital to get informed and get involved. I hope that this program serves that purpose for all of you. And if you like this program, tell your friends about it. You know, you can go to the website and you can click on the podcast and you can listen to all the shows I've done over the past years. And if you find it interesting, you like a particular podcast, forward it to your friends. This is an educational process. And it's a really great price. My favorite price. It's free. It's free. Because ever since 9/11, ever since seeing those ashes flutter down on my neighborhood like a soft snow, containing human remains undoubtedly, I made a decision to get my perspectives out there. Not just to spew nonsense. I try not to do or provide information that is really vital. It has to be vital for me to provide it to you, and it's always fact-based. This isn't about conjecture. This is about hard, cold facts. It's about sections of law. It's about reports issued by the government. You know, I call going to the DHS website and the DOJ website dumpster diving because so much of it is propaganda. So I tried to read between the lines, and with my eye of cynicism, if you will, I try to show my readers and the people that, who listen to my programs or who watch me on TV, I try to provide them with that insight so they could see the untold story. And boy, there are so many of those, and that's what this show is about. That's what I'm about. This is a mission of love, love of this country, and love of our fellow citizens, irrespective of their political orientation, irrespective of race, religion, ethnicity. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This is about America and Americans. And we are our brothers and sisters' keepers. We need to work together against those people who would take our futures and take our American dreams and the dreams of our children and shred them so that the people at the very top of the food chain, not the millionaires, but the billionaires, can acquire still more wealth. You know, I always compare them to a cancerous tumor. Cancer has an insatiable appetite for nutrients. Malignancies secrete hormones that the body starts spinning off extra blood vessels so the tumor can bathe itself in nutrients, starving off the healthy tissue. And that cancer is very successful right up until the day the patient dies, because when the patient dies, that cancer dies. The people that are so hell-bent on acquiring every last penny that they can by dropping wages, by tightening the screws on the people who work for them so they can maximize profits, well, they're going to do real well too. But God help us if that day ever comes when the America we know and love evaporates. Those folks are playing a dangerous game, and we need to do what we can to convince our politicians that we're on to them and that they need to take their oaths of office seriously unless they're planning to go on the unemployment line. We saw that happen with the Dave Brad versus the cancer campaign in Virginia. We need more victories like that, not about whether it's Tea Party or Democrat or Republican. My question to the politicians is simple. Do you stand with America? Do you stand with Americans? That's what I want to know. That's what's decisive. That's what we should all be focused on. I want you to know that, as always, it's great joining you at the end of the week. Great to spend time with you. I was happy to bring you an amazing guest, General Paul Vallely. I hope you will join me again next week at the same time, at the same place, on the Michael Cutler Hour. Meanwhile, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Please go to capsweb.org. Check out what's on those websites. If you like it, forward it to your friends. I'm trying to create a bucket brigade of truth. Remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody.